This morning, dozens of Larry Nassar's victims will have their voices heard in court. Sentencing for the longtime USA Gymnastics team doctor follows his guilty plea in November to sexually abusing multiple girls.
How do you plead?
Guilty.
Nearly 100 of Nassar's accusers are expected to give victim statements this week.
I met Larry Nassar when I was somewhere around the age of 5 years old. My parents had become close friends with Larry and his wife, Stephanie. It was during this time, I estimate I was approximately 6 years old, that Larry Nassar began to sexually abuse me. Perhaps you have figured it out by now, but little girls don't stay little forever. They grow into strong women that return to destroy your world.
Hello and welcome to Real Crime Profile. This is Jim Clemente, former New York City prosecutor, retired FBI profiler, and writer-producer on CBS's Criminal Minds. And with me today in the studio is...
Laura Richards, criminal behavioral analyst, former New Scotland Yard, and co-creator and co-executive producer of The Case Of.
And I am Lisa Zambetti. I am the casting director for Criminal Minds, where Jim Clemente is my colleague. It's nice to have us all back together again.
It's great. Right. Good to see you.
Yeah, it's great to see you guys.
But Jim is wearing a surgical mask, so when Lisa and I look over at him...
Because I am being conscious of the fact that there are germs floating around, and part of it is to protect me, and part of it is to protect you guys.
So I know half the country is sick with the flu, and I bet you guys have just come back from your...
We have doing the case of season two, and you know we were working very long hours, and yeah. I'm not surprised Jim is feeling a bit poorly, because we would start at sometimes... 9 or 10, and then we'd go on occasions to 11, 12,
and drive 2 or 3 hours, and it was pretty crazy. But particularly the last couple of weeks was a major push, but we got it done, and soon we'll be announcing.
I can't wait. So today's a special episode that we're doing because of the clamoring from many of our listeners and from ourselves from what's been happening this week in the case. Do you guys want to describe what we're going to talk about today?
Well, it's the case of Larry Nassar.
Yes, and please don't call him doctor.
Because apparently he's not, right?
He's not anymore, and he really never was. But yes, so this is the U.S. gymnastics quote-unquote doctor who was recently sentenced to a death sentence for his abuse of hundreds, if not thousands, of gymnasts put in his care. And I think many of our listeners, as well as we, have been watching, you know, testimony after testimony at his sentencing. Thank goodness that the judge allowed this, so many people to come forward and take their voice back and tell their story, things that have been kept in the dark for decades. What did you guys think? Did you watch any of that testimony?
Yeah, I did. It was very disturbing. And I know some people on Twitter have said that this is the most prolific child sex offender in the history of the United States. And I had to correct that because, unfortunately, there are a number of people who have 200, 300, 400 known victims. In this case, there's about 180 known victims of Nassar's. But as you said, it could be multiples more of that. But one of the cases that I wrote about in the Paterno report, or the Sandusky report I did for the Paternos, was about a guy named Richard Taus, who happened to be an FBI agent, who was a decorated war veteran and pilot from Vietnam. He actually adopted a Vietnamese boy whose parents were killed and brought him back with him. And I have no doubt at all that that poor kid was being molested for years, because Taos started a soccer league in Long Island, New York, and he had literally thousands of kids in it. And he molested hundreds of them that we interviewed and got disclosures from. Although Nassar is certainly in the lowest ranks in terms of having multiple victims and, you know, well over 100 and possibly into 200, 300, 400 or so, he's not the only one that has been so prolific in his offending career.
And that's one of the challenges, isn't it, Jim, of, you know, people coming forward, those coming forward then being believed, and then you've got lots of other people who don't disclose. Mm-hmm. For so many different reasons. And I read there were 200 plus victims, and that those who are coming forward again now are being called ambulance chasers, and people are saying that they're after a payday, which is outrageous.
Heinous. Yeah. heinous.
So let's talk about just how he had access to these athletes. And so Nassar graduated from University of Michigan with a degree in kinesiology, and then later went on to teach at MSU, Michigan State University. And he became first an assistant athletic trainer, and then became more and more ensconced in the gymnastics program there. And he had access to these girls as a doctor. As we all know, you know, the life of a gymnast is hard. Terribly difficult and cruel to the body, especially when you're operating at the level that these girls were. And so he was, you know, helping them with their back and their other injuries, and he completely abused that privilege. Sometimes
and trust,
with their parents and coaches in the room.
Right,
do you
we
talk
should talk about
that.
That yeah. How is that possible that an offender like him could sexually assault victims right in front of their parents? Well, one of the things he did was, he told the parents, look, this treatment is going to be a little invasive and you might not want to look, and had them turn around. That's one thing that he did. He also would make these completely bullshit medical excuses for what he was doing. And it's very clear that he was doing it so that he could sexually assault them. What he did was he groomed the entire Michigan State community, the entire U.S. Olympic community, and whatever communities he was operating in, as well as the parents and guardians of these girls and other coaches and school administrators. He was a very prolific, nice guy, acquaintance offender, pillar of the community offender, much the same as Jerry Sandusky was. But Jerry Sandusky had a different position of trust. He started a charity, the Second Mile. And so thousands, literally tens of thousands of kids would come through that charity, and he'd have access to them that way. And Nassar used his medical license to do the same thing, get access to victims and exploit them. And it's a really troubling situation because a number of the victims did speak out. And so...
And some of them were medalists, weren't they, Jim? I mean,
yeah,
the Olympic...
Sure.
Medalists?
Olympic gold medalists.
Some of the highest, most high-profile gymnasts that we've ever known have
right.
come forward.
And the thing about it is, I believe that a huge part of this was that the people that knew Nassar knew how professional he was, and I'm putting air quotes up, what a nice guy he was, more air quotes, what a pillar of the community he was, more air quotes.
What because, a wonderful doctor,
right,
a lot of them said.
Because they knew him as these titles, they did not believe in their mind that he could be doing anything wrong, that he could be doing something that was actually sexual victimization of these girls. And it's something we have to get our minds over. The same thing happened with Sandusky. And believe me, the same thing is happening now in thousands of other youth-serving organizations across this country where there are people who have been given access to the children and to the young adults and are in a position of trust, and they're abusing that trust. And they're doing it almost in plain sight because people do not believe that you can be a nice person and still be sexually attracted to children.
Oh, he was absolutely in plain sight. I mean, he was fearless. I mean, shameless. He, you know, had plenty of videotapes of him on YouTube as, you know, as a doctor. And right there, he would have the gymnast and, you know, touching them professionally and showing their pelvis and their back and so on.
But that's grooming, you know.
Yeah,
it's getting
normalizing
familiar
to
with
his
the touch,
yes.
Right? And then he would explain away, rationalize away his behavior. When somebody complained to him, he would say, oh, no, this is a proven technique. And then a number of times over the course of his career, mostly since 2014, I guess really these complaints have been sort of snowballing, but he actually was investigated. But he was investigated by a team of his peers who all considered him at the peak of their profession and did not in any way believe that he could be an offender.
Well, that's just asinine. And, you know, in fact, two teenagers reported him in 1997. And so, you know, it sounds like from all the reports that it goes back decades,
yeah.
But 14 plus professionals knew about it. They knew that he had been reported and, you know, they allowed him to continue and they enabled him.
Right. But here's the thing. In 2014, he was investigated, again, those air quotes, and cleared of any sexual wrongdoing. Does anybody Does that sound familiar to anybody? That's exactly what happened in 1998 with Jerry Sandusky. And the problem is when professionals don't do their job, when they just do a gloss over, when they don't educate themselves about how these nice guy acquaintance, pillar of the community offenders operate, when they don't do that, they let down the entire world. They let down all the victims. They let down all the communities that this offender is a part of and all the future victims that this guy then has access to because they did not do their job.
Oh, right. Absolutely.
It could have all been prevented. You know, the intervention and prevention points are just so prevalent in this case and many others, and that accountability is just lacking. You know, is it because people don't take the complaints seriously because they don't want to scare off sponsors, or, you know, they don't want to risk medals in inverted commas, and they're placing performance over protection and protection of vulnerable young girls, which is right. Just outrageous.
Well, it is a big question, but I hope that this investigation that the judge called for, and I know the district attorney is conducting a deep investigation into Michigan State and the U.S. gymnastics, I hope this investigation doesn't get sidetracked on the sports, because it is not isolated to sports. It is not isolated to institutions of higher or lower education. It is any youth serving organization. Any youth serving organization is a target-rich environment, and it will attract a certain number of offenders who want to get access, authority, and control over children for sex. And these people are so motivated, they will get a medical degree. They will become the pinnacle of their career. They will work so hard, and they will be seen as so dedicated to the children or young adults that they actually deal with, because they're doing it for another reason. It's in their brain. So we have to look at the behavior to determine what's really going on. And I've said this before many times. If somebody wants to spend more time with your child than you can stand spending with your child, that's a red flag. Are these people balanced? The people that are working with children, are they balanced? Do they have something other than children in their life? Children that they're not related to, children that they're spending all their time around. Most adults will actually tire of access to children because children can be exhausting. They have more energy than adults. They have different interests. Adults should move beyond that. But these sort of Pied Piper type people who only stay around children, who make children their life focus, that's a warning sign. There must be balance in their life. And one of the most important things is that every child who is in any situation where they could be alone with an adult should be told that any adult, no matter how good we believe they are, no matter how much we love and trust and looked up to and respect that person, any adult is capable of doing something that's wrong, that violates you sexually. You should know about that. Children should be able to discuss this with their parents and guardians. And this should be an ongoing conversation throughout a child's childhood so that they know that they can tell their parents or guardians or school officials or the police what's going on.
Yeah, well, sure. But that was part of Nassar's evil genius, him doing it with them in the room. You know, he was digitally penetrating them in the room and calling it myofascial pelvic release, which I have had myofascial pelvic release, and you do not have to penetrate the vaginas. But he normalized this kind of touching mm-hmm. in front of them. So God knows what would happen when the adult wasn't there. And the kid was like, well, he did this in front of my parents and they did nothing. I mean, how do you fight against that? That seems like so above and beyond what I can believe, you know?
Well, what you do is you stand up for your kids. You see something, you question it. You actually follow through. You make noise. You make sure that everybody hears you, and you don't stop saying it. You take that child away from that person. You don't let that person have access again. And I know it's difficult because most of these parents wanted their kids to go to the Olympics.
That's right.
Wanted the young adults who were at Michigan State wanted to be athletes on the school teams. And so this was something they were sort of forced to do. And that's a terrible thing. So it just ups the responsibility on the side of the administrators and coaches and anybody who has anything to do with youth serving organizations to get educated, to understand the warning signs, and to call out the offenders when they're offending. Safe for Athletes, that's SAFE, the number 4, athletes.org, has a bunch of wonderful model plans and contracts and policies for any youth-serving organization that you can adapt to your organization's use, and it's free. And it will keep everybody on notice of what the good things to do and what the bad things to do are, and it will give victims the right to come forward. And if somebody steps across that line even once, they should be fired. They should be put on notice when they sign their agreement, and if they ever violate it, they should be gotten rid of. And it should be in a very loud way, not in a, oh, let's sweep them under the rug, in a, you know, the keepers kind of push them down the street to somebody else. It should be done in a way that everybody in the industry knows it.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember you speaking many years ago, actually, Jim, and making that clear point that, you know, if anyone wants to spend more time with your children than you do, that's a warning sign. And it's such an important thing that people understand, because we talk a lot about stranger danger, and that's the thing that parents tend to worry about the most. But it's actually those who are in proximity to your child, and the prevention messages can be challenging. But there was, I was reading that there was a young girl called Carl Stevens who NASA was married, and her parents were friends with, the parents were friends basically, and so they would have dinner together. But whenever they were around at her house, he would go down to the basement all the time to see the little girl at the age of 6. He would go down there, and that's when he exposed himself to her for the first time. And she had been saying to her parents continuously that he was doing these things to her, even though she didn't really understand what it was. And, you know, the mum and the dad just didn't believe what she was saying. And actually now when they look back, you know, the mother just said, you know, there were so many red flags. And when she did challenge him, he just kept saying, but I just enjoy hanging out with children. I just like playing with them and
well,
playing games
with them. Well, if somebody says that, get them the hell away from your kids. Because you are an adult. Why do you enjoy playing with children? I'm sorry, we have to put up walls to protect these children. Get the hell out.
My last treatment was in August 2016. A week later, he was let go by MSU. I'm possibly the last child he will ever assault. MSU Sports Medicine charged me for those appointments. My mom is still getting billed for appointments where I was sexually assaulted. I have never wanted to hate someone in my life, but my hate towards you was uncontrollable. Larry Nassar, I hate you.
One of the victims who was testifying this week was saying that her mother is still being billed for appointments she had with this doctor and who was abused during those appointments. I mean, what the fuck, Michigan State University? I mean, what? How does that happen? How is it just so disconnected to reality? I can't.
Yeah. Sorry. Well, let's talk about the sentence itself. And there's a couple of interesting things that went on. But one of the things that I was looking for and then really struck by was Nassar's statement to the judge right before he was actually sentenced. And what he did was a number of times he turned around to the galley and started talking to the victims and says, you know, you telling all your stories, you can't believe how profoundly they affected me and yada, yada, yada. But then he gave the ultimate tell. The judge made him turn back to the mic and he said, words cannot express how sorry I am for what happened to you. And that's it. He just gave it all away. He took no responsibility. There is absolutely no remorse in that statement. The guy is blaming the victims. He's saying what happened to you, not what I did to you, what I deliberately did to you, what I went to medical school for, what I wormed my way into this community, into the communities of Michigan State and United States Gymnastics. I did that deliberately to get access to you, to take advantage of you. He didn't do any of that. He didn't say a word like that. It's leakage of the highest order. I knew it was going to happen, and that's what he said. And that should warn everyone that he does not think he did anything wrong. He's distancing himself from his own actions. He's taking that passive voice about what happened to the victim as if it was their fault.
He doesn't think he did anything wrong. I'm sure, right?
Takes no responsibility.
Is he a psychopath, you guys? Or is he a pedophile? What would you diagnose
him as? Well, a pedophile would be somebody who's exclusively sexually attracted to prepubescent kids.
And his range was like from 6 years old to 20. I mean, is that unusual to have such a wide age?
It is. It's not totally uncommon because many times an offender will have a specific sexual preference for a particular age range. But if that age isn't available, then they'll take a substitute. There's a lot of crossover in age and gender, in fact.
But a lot of those girls look much younger anyway.
Because they're gymnasts. Yeah. They're tiny. Yeah.
So, it's opportunity and situational and proximity. And he had a huge amount of opportunity because of where he had situated himself and under the guise of, helping these, vulnerable young girls who at the time when they're going through puberty and they're trying to be disciplined and they're trying to be, incredible athletes, he no doubt was playing on all of those vulnerabilities and used it as part of his manipulation. You know, this is a master manipulator and an expert predator.
Well, Safe for Athletes was actually formed by Catherine Starr, who was in USA Swimming, who went through exactly the same kind of thing, only it was with coaches. And I know other Olympic athletes from the United States and from around the world who've gone through similar things. When you're dedicated to be an Olympic athlete, you have to work out 8, 10, 12, 14 hours a day for years. You have to put so much into it. Once you're doing that, and then something like this happens, you don't want to give up your entire career. You don't want all those miserable hours and days and weeks and months and years. You don't want that to amount for nothing. So they just look past it. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the insidious natures of this type of offender. And believe me, there are also female offenders out there doing exactly the same thing. So keep your eyes open for both genders. The fact is that they are so dedicated to what they're doing. And he found, as you said, Lisa, he found an incredibly nefarious way to insinuate himself into their lives and to take advantage of everyone in his personal life, in his official life, in his volunteer life. It's amazing how prolific he was.
I think a big shout out needs to go to the Indianapolis Star. You know, without their dogged reporting, as the Attorney General said, as everybody said, not the prosecutors, not the police, not USA Gymnastics or Michigan State University would have brought him to justice. Mm-hmm. It was the investigative reporting of the Indy Star who started trying to crack a coach who had been accused of molesting. And that reporting, they just keep digging and digging. And finally, Nasser came on their radar. And I think it's important. That's why we need journalists. We need news organizations that will not give up. And I'm really grateful for them.
Yeah.
And the judge was interesting as well, wasn't she? I mean, ironically, it was a female judge who sentenced him, Judge Rosemary Aquilina. And I just want to quote what she said. "It is my honor and privilege to sentence you. You do not deserve to walk outside a prison ever again," she said. "You have done nothing to control those urges, and anywhere you walk, destruction will occur to those most vulnerable." Rosemary added, "I just signed your death warrant."
Well, literally she did not, but, because unfortunately there are appeals available to him and he could get out. I doubt it. I mean, because there are so many multiple offenses. He got 60 years on the federal charges for child pornography. He got 40 to 175 years on this particular case, and he's going to be sentenced on another case for three other girls very shortly. But
he'll be eligible for parole in 99 years.
Yeah, but
we don't tend to have those sentences in the UK, you see.
Really?
So, I was just reading just a lot of people's reactions to that, particularly in the UK, that they wish that our judges would sentence similarly, but they do not. You know, you may get months, years at times, and, it's a crying shame. And I think this is a very clear message that's been handed out.
Yeah. But I hope what it doesn't do is prevent other people in other schools and other youth-serving organizations from wanting to call out people who are pillar of the community, nice guy, nice gal, wonderful at their profession, but doing questionable things to kids. And so I hope that just because this person could potentially go away for life doesn't mean that you shouldn't call out this behavior. This behavior is wrong under any circumstance. And if you see something and you don't say something and you don't follow up and you don't give the child an opportunity to actually be believed, because a number of these girls that came forward over the course of the years at Michigan State and USA Gymnastics were not believed. And they were told, this is a major issue. If you keep going forward with this, you could get in a lot of trouble. And I'm hypothesizing that at least some of that was because they did not believe that it's possible that NASA could be doing that.
The coach, Kathy Klagis, I believe her name was his fiercest defender and tried to just allay all the parents' fears. The parents who did come forward and say, hey, something's happening, she would just completely defend him. And that's
what's she saying now?
She's not saying anything. Well, she's been fired, thank God. But
that's really, it's a twofold issue, isn't it? It's one, victims coming forward and believing them and taking them seriously. And the second is the enablers, the people who are around the perpetrator, who defends them without asking the right questions.
Right. There are people doing that with Woody Allen, for example. I mean, just because he's such a, quote, brilliant director, they just will not believe that he could have been sexually attracted to and sexually molested his daughter. Here's the problem. They know his behavior. They know what he did. They know that he married his own stepdaughter. Well, it was not a traditional marriage, but it was the same situation. He was living with her in a family unit where he was the father and she was a daughter, and he marries her. That should give people pause, at the very least.
Yeah. There's a few signs there.
Yeah, there's a
right
whole
there.
Podcast we need
and,
to do on
and
that.
If, yes, and if you're listening, Dylan Farrow, we would love to have you on this podcast because I absolutely believe every word that you said. It's amazing how eloquent you are in your description of what happened to you. And every single indicator of veracity comes out when you speak. And I saw you speaking out on TV, and I've read your statements before, and I believe you 100%.
And just getting back to this case, parents need to talk to each other, compare notes. That's what struck me, is so many of the victims said that they thought that they were the only ones. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of girls never thought to, compare notes because they just felt so isolated,
but the silence colludes with the perpetrator. Unfortunately, that silence is a major problem.
Right. And what's the opposite of that? Speaking out and in numbers, you have a tremendous amount of power speaking out together. The fact is, victims always will outnumber offenders. There's always going to be more victims out there than the offenders because they have multiple victims over the course of their offending career. So if you can find other victims and you could put together a common voice, you have power and strength in that. Go to the newspapers if the police aren't listening to you. Go to blogs and any other form of media and speak out, just like Dylan Farrow did. And I think that's an amazingly courageous thing, and I wish that the Hollywood community would embrace her and actually do something about the fact that her father sexually victimized her.
You're a pathetic monster that is only sorry you got caught. I'm here today with all these other women, not victims, but survivors, to tell you face to face that your days of manipulation are over.
Speaking out is a very scary thing to do, and victims will risk assess what that means to them, and many of them decide that there's just too many things that would be a negative repercussion.
Right.
And that's the unfortunate thing, but suffice to say that there is life after abuse, and those who do speak out, in fact many of those in England and Wales who spoke out were part of the campaigns to change the laws on stalking and coercive control and domestic violence, and there's a lot more that we can do together, and as Jim said, our number is far greater. And certainly just giving a nod to the Turpin case that happened here in LA over the last, I guess it was a few weeks ago now, the couple that had their children, 13 of them, chained to their beds, you know, from the age of two, well, the children were aged 2 to 29, so some of them not even children anymore. But again, this talks to coercive control, and we're talking about different types of abuse.
Laura, some of our listeners have asked me to ask you that, you know, we talk about coercive control in terms usually of, what would you call it, you know, men-women dynamics, but it's out there in terms of organizations. They can exert coercive control, too, over their flock or...
They can. I mean, you can see it in organizations, institutions, but you can see it in families. You know, it's not just about intimate relationships. It's family dynamics, too. And that, with the Turpin case in particular, of having their children, keeping them captive and torturing them, that is a form of coercive control. But, of course, there was physical cruelty there as well.
Torture. So, I mean, they were doing things like they would go and buy pies at the store and put them on the counter, and the kids would be starved. They wouldn't be able to eat them, and the parents would eat them in front of them. They would buy toys. They would feed the dogs in front of the children. I mean, just horrible things, just ongoing psychological torture as well as physical torture, just unimaginable stuff. It's just so disgusting. But
it is,
I really believe that it was sort of a cult-like behavior in this particular family, and I think it's all narcissistic behavior on part of the father. The mother was probably separated from her family by him. And
she was abused at the age of 16. She was sexually abused. But I actually think, you know, when we use the word cult, it turns it into something different. Then for me, it's much more just about coercive control, that power and control, that dynamic that one wants to have the power and control, the ultimate, over another. And sadly, with that family, and it was going on here, you know, in plain sight, but we've had cases in Austria, the Fritzl case, where he mm-hmm. kept his daughter and she had children in the basement.
And the Casey DeGuard case, same thing. And the Kansas City case, where the three, you know, girls
right.
were kept captive. It happens a lot. And the
it
neighbors
does.
Sometimes see things, but they don't take the next step and investigate or report. And unfortunately, that conspires to allow these offenders to keep going.
That silence that colludes. And that's why, you know, if you do see things, or perhaps if you're not seeing things, if there are children next door and you're not seeing them, there's a clear warning sign there, because children should be visible, they should be going to school, they should be at play. And, you know, to have a whole family, 13, that nobody sees at all is really concerning, that no one's calling or knocking on the door and asking what's going on, because we all have a duty of care, you know, towards children. Certainly in the UK, there are safeguarding, very clear safeguarding procedures. And, you know, whether it's in an organisation, like through, you know, the gymnastic association, whether it's in a sport, whether it's in a company, whether it's at a youth club, whether it's in a family, we should all take responsibility for calling it out and ask questions mm-hmm. if we see things that don't look right or don't feel right, because perpetrators do just hide in plain sight. That's the problem.
Laura, can you also talk about what the DA announced his investigation to Michigan State Athletics, because apparently some of the male athletic teams have been sort of getting special treatment in terms of young ladies who have alleged sexual assault by them, and that's going to become part of this whole Nassar investigation?
I hadn't actually heard about that, Jim, but, you know, again, I think that there are times, and sadly they seem to be more prevalent than what we know about, where people are excused for their abusive behavior because of, you know, their profession, or they're an athlete, or you mentioned privilege before. Sometimes it's about privilege, people being in positions, but other times it's about trust, and these things can be exploited. And I do think there are organizations, and I don't know the details of that, Jim, but there certainly seem to be some organizations that will rather cover it up and hope that it goes away and bury things, rather than ask the right questions about what's going on. And, you know, male entitlement and privilege and wealth tends to weigh in a lot in these types of situations.
Sounds like there's some kind of continuum going on at MSU. I'm sure it's not just there, but it sounds like, what is it about this university? I mean, that the sports is like a powerhouse for sports, and that is like above, you know,
But is it just that university,
no,
or
I'm sure
is it
not, but many?
I mean,
this
many.
Is
like, it's, yeah.
I mean, campus rape is a horrific situation in every campus across this country. And unfortunately, it's very difficult. First of all, rapes in general get reported at a very low rate. And those who come forward are discouraged by the system. The system needs to be put in place that encourages them, not discourages them. And because of the Clery Act, a school has to report to the public any sexual assaults that happen on the campus so that next generation students and their parents can look and see what's going on at this campus. So schools have every reason to try to suppress those numbers so that they don't lose students.
Yeah, you don't want to put that in the brochure.
Yeah, well.
For sure.
They should stop it. They should prevent. They should put in protections so that that doesn't happen as opposed to trying to suppress it when it does.
Well, all that plays to are, you know, is giving a green light for people to carry on abusing, you know, whether it's stalking, domestic violence, sexual violence. You know, it basically says that it's fine for it to happen because we don't want the official numbers on our record. Mm-hmm. So with regards to students in the UK, there's the NUS, which is the National Union of Students, and we've tried to work with them progressively around matters of stalking, domestic violence and sexual violence. And there have been numerous studies, sort of various surveys that have been done to see how prevalent abuse is. And we're only really just starting to get into it. And I think stalking was about 12%. But of course, it depends how you ask questions and when you ask questions and how you ask questions as to how people respond to those questions. So I think over here, it's much more, you know, tied to sort of the sports universities and that sports, as we saw when we talked about AJ Simpson, and you know, the entitlement that comes with those athletes that are, you know, protected pretty much. And the NFL, we've seen lots of cases of domestic violence and domestic abuse and, you know, escalation of very serious offences happening and it being brushed off as being something that's very minor. So again, it's all part and parcel of the same problem. And, you know, the case that we've been talking about, you know, particularly with NASA and others, you know, misogyny being at the heart of a lot of this and, you know, violence against women and girls not really being understood in the way that it needs to be. And that's not to say there aren't male victims, because there are. But I think in terms of prevalence rates, when we're talking about someone like NASA, you know, him exploiting the vulnerability of those young girls and everything that goes with that, you know, what are the reasons for why he gets away with it? Well, I'm sure that there are aspects there of, you know, the institution, the organisation and the university that he belongs to, and people just hiding it, excusing it, and just some probably just accepting, well, it just goes on. It's just one of those things, which we should never be in that position where it's just seen as something that happens. The accountability part is really important.
So we find ourselves in a situation that, unfortunately, I have every reason to believe is going on in multiple usurping organizations across the country and other universities across the country. And I hope that this situation is a wake-up call to administrators and coaches and athletes and people in any sort of situation that has children or vulnerable people around them, because they become target-rich environments for these types of offenders. Keep your eyes open. Keep your ears open. Talk to people about it. If you hear something, say something to somebody else. If you see something, say something to somebody else. If somebody comes to you in confidence, encourage them. Stand with them and report it. Make sure it gets written down, because once it's on paper, it really can't go away. And it will come back to bite somebody. And even if it's just for that, hopefully those people will actually do something about it.
Well said.
Thank you for listening to Real Crime Profile.
If you like our podcast, there are a few things that you can do. You can take 2 minutes and go to Apple Podcast and leave us a 5-star review. You can also check out all Real Crime Profile offers and promotion and our sponsors in our show notes. Another thing you can do is go over to Facebook and like our Facebook page. And one last thing is, please tell all your friends, family and colleagues about us and spread the Real Crime Profile word. Thank you so much for listening to us. We really appreciate you.
Real Crime Profile is produced and edited by Paul Francis Sullivan. Sound engineered by Terrell Parham. Music composed by Simba Tsumba. Logo art by Jim Clementi. Real Crime Profile is produced by XG Productions and distributed by Wondery.
For advice and support if you're experiencing stalking in the UK, you can contact Paladin National Stalking Advocacy Service on 0203 866 4107, or you can go on the website www.paladinservice.co.uk. If you're experiencing domestic violence, call the National Domestic Violence Helpline, free phone 0800 2000 247. In the US, if you're experiencing domestic abuse and need advice, safety, shelter or counselling, call Genesis, the 24-hour hotline, 214 946 4357 or go on their website www.genesisshelter.org or the domestic violence hotline on 800 799 7233.